Welcome to The Link, connecting new immigrants to Canada and Canada to the world. Hello, I'm Carmel Kilkenny on this Wednesday, the 25th of March. Bright, sunny skies here in Montreal, and we're warming up to a high of about 8 degrees today. It's so bright and warm, the bears are coming out of hibernation at the Eco Museum, not far from the city. Coming up on The Link, Paul Li Yu understood finding a job in his field would be a real challenge when he came to Canada, but he also believed if he kept on looking and kept trying, he'd begin to succeed.
I believe if you can do well in your home country, you can do well here at Canada. Once you go through the hard time, you will find all your dream will come true. I landed in the 4 months paid internship here at City of Mississauga as a technical writer. So that's my first start. It was a turning point for me.
More on Paul Li Yu's story coming up. And Joseph Boyden's books have been pleasing critics and readers alike. In today's bibliophile, Miguel Sihuko will begin to talk about Boyden's most recent literary page-turner. It's called Through Black Spruce. And this week in 1951, a baby was born in Hamilton, Ontario. She grew up to win her country's highest praise.
Erin Kane, Officer of the Order of Canada, holder of, at last count, 3 honorary degrees, heartthrob to a nation, and most of all, and before all that, ballerina sublime. You like that?
Oh, gee, that's nice. Thank you very much. Yeah.
More on Karen Kane's Dance to Stardom from our history buff, Jim Craig. More great music, Omar Hyatt here with financial advice. All coming up in this hour of The Link. Many immigrants come to Canada with high hopes, big dreams, and stellar qualifications. And despite their impressive professional backgrounds, many struggle to find a job in their field. But people do succeed, and now some of those stories are being told in a photo exhibit. It's called 20 Journeys, a visual essay of the immigrant experience, and it features some of the stories of skilled immigrants who've come to Canada and succeeded in finding jobs in their field. Lynn-Françoise Pelletier is The Link's Toronto correspondent. She met with Paul Li Yu, one of the successful newcomers featured in the exhibit, and asked him to share his story.
In China, I heard a lot of good things about Canada. My wife and I, we had a discussion. We thought that's an amazing country. We want to try to go to Canada just to have a look. But when we came here, we found it's really an amazing country. So we decided to stay here and settle down. My name is Paul Liu. My dream is find a job here and enjoy the life here with my family, and also provide a very secure and very good environment for my children. This is my country now, so I want to, you know, put my root here. After I landed here for 7 months, I started to send out the resume. I sent out hundreds of resumes within 2 months. I was very surprised. No one called me. I didn't get any response. So I thought, oh, there must be something wrong. I did not have Canadian experience. The employer here, they are hesitant to hire the new candidate, despite they have the expertise they need, and despite they have the years of experience in that occupation. So this is a really big challenge. And the second challenge to me, I think, is language. It was really embarrassing for me to find out, you know, people could not understand my English, and I couldn't understand them either. So it's really hard. So it was very frustrated. It's hard to find a professional job at the first beginning. So I thought maybe I need to get a survival job to support my family. Even for the survival job, it's very hard. So finally, I paid $100 of the agent fee and got a job to work in the fast food restaurant. And they paid me $6 per hour, and the minimum wage at that time was $7.15. During that time, it was really hard, but I should say I keep the positive. So on my way to work or on my way back, I always put the headphone. I listen to the radio. I try to improve my listening, and I try to speak, try to talk. So for many times, when I was sitting in the subway, I fall in sleep with my radio on. When I came home, I always heard from the radio, they said, "Good morning, everyone." And I met a lot of people in the subway. At the midnight, normally most of the people, they were very negative. They said, you know, why did you come here? You should go back to home. I thought, you know, since we made a decision to come to here, all the motivation was still exist. So I said, you know, I need to spend some more time and try harder and harder. Eventually, I believe I would be there. I heard from my friends about the name of a career bridge. So I went to the website and did some research. It may be a good opportunity for me. So I contacted career bridge. I told them I was a new immigrant, so I want to find a job. They interviewed me. They actually tested my English. They tested my, you know, my qualification in my professional. Then they put me in their database. Because the employer in Canada, they are willing to hire the candidate which has been recommended by the medium they trust. And to me, Career Bridge is this medium. So through Career Bridge, I landed in the 4 months paid internship here at City of Mississauga as a technical writer. So that's my first start. It was a turning point for me. When the city initially hired me as an internship, they did not have too much expectation. What I did, I volunteered to do more. I read all the valuable documents. I even read their recycle box to find some valuable information, but all this under their permissions. I was very positive, so everyone in the unit, they noticed I was very happy, and they're willing to teach me and share me the information. My manager actually told me this is totally exceed her expectation. So that's why I succeed and get a job, because of my level of effort, my voice of idea, and my contribution to the team. I got a promotion. It's hard to get promotion in this team. It's a very challenging job. We deal with different clients, and normally we deal with a lot of high-level clients in the city. So I move very fast. I got a permanent job as a junior buyer. Then only after several months, I got an intermediate buyer. And now I'm an intermediate buyer here at City Mississauga. So I purchase the software, hardware, consulting services, and license, maintenance, and support for the city. I use my skill and knowledge to achieve the best value for the city. Canada is really an amazing country. I believe if you can do well in your home country, you can do well here at Canada. Every new immigrant, when they come to Canada, they would have a hard time. But the hard time is only a temporary. So be positive and never give up. If you try to improve yourself and prepare to get ready for the opportunity, you will find eventually you will be there. And I'm one of the immigrants. I'm one of you. So I can do it, and you all can do it.
That was Paul Liu talking about his experience in Canada. Lynn Francoise Pelletier spoke with him after she saw him featured in the photo exhibit called 20 Journeys, a visual essay of the immigrant experience. And there's some beautiful photographs in that exhibit. It was presented by the Toronto Regional Immigrant Employment Council, that's TRIEC. And if you'd like to take a look at those, they were on display at the Mississauga Civic Centre and BCE Place in downtown Toronto. But you can find them on the site at www.triec.ca, www.triec.ca. And of course, we'll have a link to their site on our page. We're at the link at rcinet.ca. Well, Canadian author Joseph Boyden's second novel is Through Black Spruce. In 2008, it won one of Canada's top literary prizes, the Giller. That's a wonderful achievement, though not something foreign to the 40-year-old Boyden. His first book, 3 Day Road, also won a slew of prizes. But it's in Through Black Spruce that we're offered a glimpse into Boyden's own life. Miguel Cejuco is the Link's bibliophile, and he joins me now in studio to tell us a little bit about the book. But just before we get to that, Miguel, welcome back.
Thanks very much.
You're back from Hong Kong?
Yes, I was there for the Hong Kong International Literary Festival.
And how was it?
It was great. It was my first festival. It's, you know, it's a real dream come true for me as an aspiring author to be there, meeting all these authors, talking about books, meeting the readers as well.
And are you going back?
Oh, I hope so.
What came out of it?
It turns out that I don't mind speaking in front of big crowds. I thought I would because, you know, I like the quiet writing life. But I do like being out there talking about my ideas and hearing what other people have done. I've got a couple of other festivals lined up this year.
Yeah, Blue Met here in Montreal.
Blue Met, which I'm very excited about. I'm doing the Singapore one and another one in Australia in October. So
very exciting.
It is.
So let's talk about one of your colleagues here in Canada.
Sure.
Yes, Through Black Spruce. Tell me about the book. What's the story about?
Well, it starts off with the legendary Cree bush pilot named Will Byrd talking to his nieces about his life. And little by little, we come to learn that Will Byrd is in a coma and something very bad has happened to him. This is threaded through with the story of his niece, Annie, who is a very self-reliant but beautiful young Cree woman who is trying to figure out, number one, what in her own head, what happened to her uncle, and number two, what's happened to her sister who has disappeared mysteriously.
So there's a couple of threads running through it. What do you think they represent?
Well, Will Byrd is a very self-reliant fellow. He was a well-known and well-regarded hunter. He flew to the furthest reaches of northern Ontario.
This is the fictional character.
Yes, that's right. And he was very still in touch with the old Cree ways, the First Nations ways. Now Annie, his daughter, is also schooled in that. She was brought up under Will's example, so to speak, but she's done some modeling. She went to Toronto and Montreal in the story, and then New York.
Big lights, big city.
Exactly, and there she encountered some First Nations people who were living in the city, as sometimes we see, living through hardship as well. But at the same time, she's run in with a very posh party crowd. Who bring her to the nightclubs and that sort of stuff and are so enamored with her. They call her their Indian princess. And that, I think, represents the modern, less traditional ways of the First Nations culture.
Now, you've called the book a page-turner. What kept you turning the pages?
It is definitely a page-turner, yeah. Very rarely do I pick up a book and I read the first couple of pages and I'm hooked. And Boyden did that. I borrowed the book from a friend, and I was in the subway. I was reading it, and I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to get up when the subway came and get into it. I wanted to keep reading, and that's the first achievement. The second achievement is that Boyden has this wonderful sense of how to tell a story, with the intermittent and woven together two threads that he has, the two stories. He keeps you wanting, and after every chapter, something has happened, something is imminent, but he doesn't tell you what. So
his
narrative
style,
exactly. It's almost like you go from cliffhanger to cliffhanger, and you just want to tear through every chapter because you want to find out what happened to both the storylines.
Now, Boyden also features a portrayal of First Nations life. What does it tell us about that life?
Well, you know, that's what I really liked about this book is that it wasn't, he didn't exoticize anything, nor did he paint the hardships that they go through as as some sort of, you know, victimization or polemic. It was very realistic in his representation, and you know, he portrayed them as a troubled but very proud and rich culture, trying to stay close to the land, but at the same time facing the insidious problems of drug abuse and alcoholism. Will Byrd is an alcoholic, and he's trying to fight against that. But he remembers as a younger man how he was sort of a fierce warrior in a sense. He was a hunter and an airman, and you know, the alcoholism is eating away at that, and he's seeing himself battle that and become, well, a shade of what he used to be. And that's almost metaphorical, I think, for a lot of the problems that the First Nations people go through. I don't know, I mean, but this is all I've gleaned from the book.
Joseph Boyden knows this pretty intimately, doesn't he?
He does. He's Irish Ojibwe, and he lived in Northern Ontario as a professor of Aboriginal programs in Moosonee, where the book is set, where he met a lot of Cree, cousins to his own ancestors. And he went on caribou and moose hunts and snowmobile treks. And in the book, the most vivid and for me the most convincing parts were the portrayal, the bits that portrayed the First Nations people. I wasn't as convinced when he went into New York and he went into the party scene and he had Annie hanging out with all the models. That sounded not as convincing to me, but the descriptions of trapping in the north and snowmobile treks and all that sort of stuff, that just absolutely blew me away.
So what did you come away with after reading this?
An enduring respect and fascination with that culture. Again, an enduring respect and fascination with Joseph Boyden's work. He's fantastic, and I can't wait to read his next book, Three Day Road, or his first book, Three Day Road, which is a war novel centered around two First Nations soldiers sent to war by Canada. And
which war was that?
I'm not sure. I haven't read the book yet. I'll let
the
you know
first
when
World
I do. I think
war.
It was the First World War, yeah.
Levon Savunsar, intrepid producer, I think, has read the book, and he just informed us of that, the First World War. Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that one. Well, this sounds great, and it certainly pierces through some of the stereotypes that
sure
First
does,
Nations
yeah.
culture has and lives with. And I guess for anybody wanting to know a little bit more and a great story, this is the book for it, Through Black Spruce by Joseph Boyden. Miguel Cejuco, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And welcome back again.
Thanks.
So the book is Through Black Spruce. It's available through Viking Penguin, and it's $34. The author is Joseph Boyden. You're listening to The Link here on Radio Canada International. I'm Carmel Kilkenny. Glad you could join us. You know, you'll find us there on the net at www.rcinet.ca/The Link. In British Columbia, we're on CFUV Radio in Victoria and 92.5 The X in Kamloops. And why don't some of you give us a call out there? Toll free, 1-866-202-0145. You can request something you'd like to hear here on The Link. 1-866-202-0145. Well, time now for our immigrant advice column, and we're talking to Omar Hyatt. He's a financial planner and advisor, and as the Canadian economy shrinks, he's here to help us cope with some personal financial issues. Welcome back to The Link, Omar Hyatt.
Thank you very much.
Now, with tax time upon us, we wanted to talk about a new kind of savings account that's tax-free. Can you explain what it is and how it works?
As of January 2nd this year, the government introduced a tax-free saving account in French, a compte d'épargne libre impôt, CELI. It's basically an account where you can put in up to $5,000 per individual per year. So for a husband and wife, for a couple, you can put in $5,000 for one, $5,000 for the other spouse. The money inside the TFSA grows tax-free. Now, it's very important to understand you can have any kind of an investment you want, any investment vehicle inside the TFSA. So you can choose from guaranteed income certificates all the way to individual stocks. You can pick basically any blend, any mixture you want. The money grows tax-free. So there's no interest income tax, there's no capital gains tax, no dividend tax of all the money growing inside the TFSA. Let's share an example. Let's say if someone invests $5,000 in the TFSA, and after 2 years, the money becomes $7,000. He can take out that $7,000 and pay absolutely no tax on taking the money out.
Really?
Absolutely. Very important to understand. It's not tax deductible like an RRSP. So it's not like you can put in the $5,000 and reduce your income by $5,000.
For that year.
This is a non-registered account. So outside an RRSP account, the money inside it grows tax-free. So there's no tax on the profit. The confusion that a lot of clients of mine had is that they thought it was actually tax deductible. So as they file their taxes these days, they're actually asking me to send me receipts for the TFSA. And I tell them there's no receipt to send because it's not like an RRSP. It's not tax deductible. The advantage, obviously, of that is that when you take money out of the TFSA, unlike an RRSP, you don't have to pay withholding taxes and so on.
Right. You get the break at the end with the RRSP. You get the break, so to speak,
exactly.
In the beginning.
With the TFSA, there's basically no tax on the profit. The TFSA is a good account. In fact, it's a fantastic account to have non-registered money, money you have sitting around in a saving account, a checking account.
Yeah, it's a good account for the rainy day accounts.
Short-term accounts, something you can park away your money in. And again, you can pick from the most conservative to the most aggressive investment mix that you want.
Now, why did the Canadian government put this account into place at this time? Does it help the Canadian economy?
Because they realize they're taxing the living daylights out of us.
Is that so?
They're creating another opportunity, another a caveat where you can put in money up to $5,000. And very important to understand, this limit will go up and it is carried forward. So just like an RRSP, if you do not do a TFSA this year and you say, well, I missed out the opportunity, is it too late? Remember, like an RRSP, you can catch back with the limits you've missed.
So if I didn't put in $5,000 this year, I could put in $10,000 next year.
You will probably be able to put in more than $10,000 because they will increase that limit every year. Remember, with the RRSP, they increase that limit every year because they realize that incomes are indexed to inflation. So incomes are going up. And if that's happening, they have to make sure that these tax-advantaged plans keep up with the inflation as well. So chances are that TFSA limit, the $5,000 that they've started with, will go up as well.
Is there any reason not to go into this kind of an account?
The only reason would be is if you're a short-term trader, if you're someone who is putting in money there and buying and selling stocks on a day-to-day basis, then chances are that, you know, with the capital losses that you will have, because remember, with a normal non-registered account, with just opening up an account and having investments in there, if you have losses that you incur, you can use those capital losses in the future to offset capital gains. The problem with the TFSA is because it's already a tax-advantaged plan, you're not able to do that. So if you're a short-term buying and selling, trading kind of an individual, this account perhaps is not the best thing for you. This is an especially excellent plan for people who have fixed income investments. Somebody has a GIC that they park their money in, and it's their rainy day long-term fund. Remember, all the interest that's earned on the GIC is interest income, which would mean that it's taxable as your income and you have to pay 100% of it, have to file it as income. Inside this plan, all of that gets tax sheltered. So if you have fixed income investments such as GICs, such as bonds, you should be especially interested in this because all that income, all the gain that you're making is completely tax-free.
Now, are there fees consumers should watch out for when they go to set up one of these?
Excellent question. It's important to know what kind of vehicle that you're getting into. If you take a deferred sales charge kind of an investment, meaning a mutual fund which has a back-end load to it, meaning when you sell the investment, you have to pay fees on redemption. Inside the TFSA, you have to pay the fees as well. TFSAs, RRSPs, RESPs for kids that we've spoken about many times before on the show are just plans. You can put any investment mix inside that plan. If you choose to be aggressive, you can put individual stocks. If you choose to be very conservative, you can go with something like guaranteed income certificates.
But in some things like an RRSP, you have to have a minimum inside the RRSP before you can start choosing stocks, etc.
Depends on the institution that you're dealing with. You can have, for example, in the TFSA, you can buy a Citigroup share right now at $2. You can buy, you know, 2,000 and 2,500 Citigroup shares as well if you want. So inside the TFSA, it's completely your choice what kind of an investment mix that you want to choose. One more suggestion that I would have for individuals that are looking at opening up tax-free saving accounts is make sure that when you put money in the TFSA, that this is not your checking account. Do not consider this like your checking account.
Put it away.
You cannot be putting, taking money, because then it's going to mess up your $5,000 limit, because you're going to put in $5,000 and then after a couple of months you're going to go, well, I'll just put another $2,000 to my saving. The maximum per year is $5,000. This is the $5,000 that you put in there. That's your rainy day fund. Don't treat it like a checking account. Don't be putting money in. That's your normal checking account. This can be your savings.
Now, whether we're talking about tax-free savings accounts or registered retirement savings plans, they all help to cut down on income taxes we pay. Both help Canadians maximize their tax returns. Can you talk about that and why people should understand that concept?
Yes, it's important to understand. RRSPs maximize your tax returns, because whatever money you put in the RRSP, you can deduct it from your income.
For that year.
The previous year, you've paid a higher amount of tax that they've deducted already. So when you file your taxes, you tell the government, I did not actually make $50,000 last year. I made $40,000. I put $10,000 in my RRSP. The government says, we overtaxed you. They give you a refund or a rebate back. TFSAs are not tax deductible. However, they do help you, because if you're someone who has a huge investment portfolio and you have $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 of interest income that you earn from your portfolio, you can protect some of that interest income inside a TFSA. But the RRSP is the only legal way in Canada that you can reduce your income and actually get some refund back, unless you have other expenses, eligible expenses. Such as, you know, child tax credits, if you have dependents that you take care of, if you have expenses linked to your business, those are other things that you can write off your income with and actually get some money back from the government.
Well, thank you for this, Omar.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking with Omar Hayat. He's a financial advisor and planner. He joins us every month to talk about personal finance. And if you have any questions for Omar, or you'd like to hear him speak about a particular financial or investing topic, let us know. We'll pass your questions on to him. You can reach us here at The Link by emailing us. We're at thelink@rcinet.ca, or a letter the old-fashioned way. Our address is Radio Canada International, The Link at Radio Canada International, Post Office Box 6000, Montreal, Quebec, and in Canada, the postal code is H3C3A8. You can always give us a call. Our toll-free line, 1-866-202-0145. 1-866-202-0145. And from overseas, the country code is 1, and the phone number is 514-597-7461. 514-597-7461. Karen Kane celebrated her 58th birthday this week. Who is Karen Kane? Well, she's one of Canada's most famous ballerinas. For many years, she was the principal dancer at the National Ballet of Canada. She's still part of that world, now as the company's artistic director. Last year, Jim Craig looked back on Kane's life and career, and when he joined Mark Montgomery in studio, Mark began by asking Jim how Karen first got into ballet.
Well, as in the case of so many other little girls, Mark, it was because her mother enrolled her in ballet classes. Her mother thought her posture was poor. She wanted to improve that. So she enrolled her daughter at the age of 6 in those dance classes, and Kane excelled at them. She was so good, in fact, that she applied for the National Ballet School. They have auditions that they run across the country every summer. And the National Ballet of Canada's world-famous training academy is located in Toronto. Karen Kane was accepted, and that meant moving into residence in downtown Toronto at the age of 11 from the family's home in suburban Mississauga. She excelled at the school's exacting academic and dance programs, and she graduated in 1969 and was accepted into the National Ballet as a professional dancer. After just 1 year with the company, she got her big break. At the age of 19, she was asked to replace principal dancer Veronica Tennant, who was injured, to dance the lead role in Swan Lake. That's a role that she's danced over and over again for a quarter century. She was such a success that Kane herself was promoted to principal dancer.
So she did reach the top ranks of Canada's National Ballet in relatively short order. How did she go from there to international stardom?
Well, that began in 1973, Mark, when she traveled to Moscow with the National's principal male dancer, Frank Augustine, for the second international ballet competition. She won silver in the women's competition and another silver for her pas de deux with Augustine. More important, in 1972, a Russian superstar Rudolf Nureyev began dancing regularly with the National on a regular basis with Kane as his partner. Nureyev's fame helped the company tour successfully across the United States and Europe. On the National Ballet's arrival in London in 1975 for its second run of performances there with Princess Margaret and many of the city's ballet luminaries in attendance, Karen Kane was interviewed by a CBC reporter, and she gave Nureyev credit for opening doors for her and for the company.
I hope that the company realizes how much we owe to him. Without him, we wouldn't have gotten so much exposure. Without him, we'd probably still just be performing in Canada. I mean, we may have come to London, but we would never have gone to New York without Nureyev. We would never have played the big theaters in all the large American cities without Nureyev. We couldn't fill them ourselves. I mean, this is something we have to realize. Hopefully one day we won't need a name like that, that the company will be able to do it on its own, but we owe him very much.
Sounds like they were still building the stage in London in the background there.
Yeah, there was some work going on, wasn't there?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Nureyev's fame obviously reflected onto Kane as his partner, but, I mean, did it also help her development as a dancer?
Well, she says it did, Mark. For example, he taught her how to show her body to best aesthetic effect by minimizing its weak points.
I think that comment about my arms being too short, I think that's something Rudolf used to tell me, you know, that because of the length of my back, my arms would look small unless I made them really long. To extend my arms, and that was a correction he gave me right from the beginning. But, I mean, Rudolf was very aware of those things. He would tell me how I should wear my hair to make my face look a little wider, and how I should extend my arms to make them look longer, and how I should have my costumes cut a certain way to make my shoulders look wider, and, you know, all of those things. Because he's had to deal with himself, with his own body. He's learned how to do all those camouflaging techniques.
Something perhaps I could work on.
Maybe so.
I don't know. Earlier they were in London for this big performance. How was the company received for that engagement?
Well, very well, Mark, judging by these reviews.
A pleasure to welcome Canada's National Ballet back to London last night.
The Financial Times.
Last night, the National Ballet of Canada received a deservedly enthusiastic welcome back to London.
The Evening Standard.
Since its previous visit in 1972, the National Ballet of Canada has grown slightly in numbers and considerably in international stature.
The Guardian.
Obviously rousing applause there in the background. Back to Karen Kane, though. I mean, were there other influences beyond Mr. Nureyev that helped build her international career?
Yes, and in particular, Mark, the time she spent at the Ballet National de Marseille under the direction of the world-famous artistic director and choreographer Roland Petit.
For a decade, actually, he gave me the opportunity to work with him in France, and he created ballets for me. You know, he saw a whole different side of me from Canadians. I mean, Canadians really saw me as the sugar plum fairy, and he didn't see me in that way at all. He saw me as a dramatic dancer, and he let me do roles that were entirely dramatic, you know, and just fascinating roles like Nana and Albertine in his Proust ballet, and, you know, things that I've never have had the opportunity to do here. And plus, I got to travel Europe with him, and I made a film of Coppelia. He said his own version of Coppelia. So he was very influential in my having an international career, as was Nureyev.
Well, Kane's experience with Roland Petit's company led to the opportunity to perform as a guest artist with many other great world-class companies, the Bolshoi, the London Festival Ballet, the Paris Opera Ballet, the Hamburg Ballet, the Vienna State Opera Ballet, and the Elliott Feld Ballet. And by 1976, Kane was the undisputed star of the Canadian ballet world, and that fact was recognized when she was made an officer of the Order of Canada. And she was later upgraded to companion of that order. Honorary degrees began showering on her. But it didn't last. In the late 1970s, her career began to stumble. Critics started to complain that her performances were losing their freshness and their power.
So was she sort of coasting on her past achievements at that point? I mean, resting on her laurels, as it were?
Well, actually, it was the opposite, Mark. She'd become totally obsessed with perfecting all of the minute details of her performance. And as a result, the pleasure she'd once experienced disappeared. She later referred to this period as her giant slump.
I got to a point in my life where I lost the joy of dancing. And it's something that a dancer has to hold on to. If you're really meant to be a dancer, if you were really born to be a dancer, which I think you either are or you aren't. Hmm. But I began to criticize myself and analyze what I was doing so much that I stopped. I lost touch with the dancer in me. I lost touch with the instinct that made my dancing good to watch.
Well, Jim, how did she get through to this giant slump period?
Well, it was getting to the point where Kane decided that she'd have to have some time away from dancing or her career would simply collapse.
It all snowballed because the worse I felt about myself and the more awful things I read about myself, the more I believed, you know. So it just got to the point where I went to the artistic director, who was Alexander Grant at the time, and said, I just can't go on the stage anymore. It's not good for the audience, and it's not good for me, and I don't like what I'm doing. And he was wonderful, and he said, you know, take your time. And so I thought 3 months would be enough time to get myself together. However, it wasn't. It took me a couple of years, actually. But I did come around, and I did grow up a lot.
Mm. So did the new post-slump Karen Kane emerge as a new and improved prima ballerina?
Well, I think you could say that, Mark. It helped that also that she found the love of her life in 1981. Ross Petty was an actor making a movie in Toronto at the time. Both of them, up to that point, believed they'd never get married. But when Petty asked her out, the relationship quickly blossomed. And after a romantic dinner in London, Kane, as she later confirmed in her autobiography, proposed marriage to Petty. The wedding was a major celebrity event in Toronto. Petty was well known in his own right for his role in the musical Sweeney Todd and for a leading part in a very popular soap opera at the time. The marriage endured and Kane's career resumed its upward momentum. In 1989, looking back over her 20-year career at that point, she agreed with the people who had observed that she'd become a different dancer.
I suppose there are a lot of explanations for that. The young girl that sort of burst onto the stage was just a mass of raw talent and adrenaline, which I suppose was very exciting in its raw state. And now, with obviously 20 years of time to think about it and rework everything, and also, I guess, just that time does pass, and some things I don't have the same kind of energy level I used to have, but I think that I have other qualities now that have come with maturity that make my dancing quite different.
Well, Jim, I'm just thinking, I don't know a lot about ballet, but I do know that it's very demanding physically. Mm-hmm. She's been doing this for 20 years. I mean, is there any thought of retiring by this point?
Well, most people do think, most dancers do think of retiring at the 20-year mark. But Kane managed to keep going for another 7 years. And she danced her last Swan Lake in 1994, battling a bronchial infection. She announced her retirement from the National Ballet in January 1996 and finally hung up her pointe shoes at the end of that season. This is often a very traumatic moment for dancers, of course. Fortunately for Kane, however, her involvement with dance and the arts generally continued. She was president at the time of Toronto's Dance Transition Resource Centre, which is a sort of retirement insurance and counselling agency for former dancers. And a year after her retirement, Kane became artistic director, artistic associate, that is, of the National Ballet. In 2004, she was appointed chair of the Canada Council for the Arts, the government arts funding body. And in 2005, Karen Kane succeeded James Kudelka as artistic director of the National Ballet of Canada.
A resounding career, nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Karen Kane, thank you very much for this, Jim.
You're welcome, Mark.
That was Jim Craig talking to Mark Montgomery about Karen Kane, one of Canada's best-known ballerinas. And now joining us with sports is one of Canada's best-known sports guys, Terry Haig.
Nearing retirement. I don't get a retirement. A friend of mine, Bruhansky, said to me, because I don't get any retirement because I'm a freelancer. He said you had your retirement between 20 and 35.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
I had all the money I needed did whatever I wanted, but you only get one in this life.
I see. Yeah. I see. All right. Well, we're going to go to the World Figure Skating Championships. They're underway in Los Angeles.
That's right. Canada
is looking good in the ice dancing competition.
Absolutely. Good news for Canadian ice dancers. Tessa Virtue. Now, how could you vote against Tessa Virtue?
Great name.
Yeah. And Scott Moore at the World Figure Skating Championships in L.A. The pair finished third yesterday in compulsory dance to put them in striking distance of the Russian team leaders, Oksana Damina and Maxim Shabilin of Russia. Canadian Tanith Belbin and her American partner Benjamin Augusto are in second place. Now, you're probably wondering, what is compulsory dance, right?
Tanith Belbin, that's another great name. Yes, compulsory dance?
Yeah, here's Cam Cole's description in today's Gazette. 30 couples attempt to trace the same pattern in the ice to the same rhythm, many of them to the same piece of music. Four trips around the ice surface in 80 seconds. This year's dance is the Paso Doble. Wherever the music happens to end is where the skaters end. It fades out. Let me say that again. Wherever the music happens to be when the skaters get to the end of lap four is where it fades out. Afterwards, everybody gets together to try to figure out what made the top mark team any better than anybody else. Very subjective.
A lot of criticism of that, isn't there?
I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about it today. Who goes into something? I mean, you got to hand it to people to go into something like that.
Oh, it's beautiful to watch. I love watching
ice dancing.
Yeah, although I heard some criticism of the costumes this year. What's going on?
I missed it last night.
Lots of sparkle.
No, I did not tune in to the
lots
ice dancing.
Lots of shiny stuff.
Okay. Canada's second ice dancing couple, Vanessa Crone and Paul Poirier, are in 10th place. Still to come, Carm. Both the original dance and the free dance. Yay, the Madison.
All right, going to cycling now. So Lance Armstrong's having surgery on his collarbone?
As we speak. Suffered that fall on Monday in a comeback race in Spain. Now, we were wondering if he was going to miss the Tour de France. His manager, just a couple of hours, said that his Armstrong more than likely will cycle in the Tour de France.
Wow.
He could miss the Giro d'Italia, which takes place from May 9th to 31st, but it looks like he's won it seven times, the Tour de France. Meanwhile, as Armstrong was flying home for surgery, Astana teammate and fellow American Levi Leipheimer won the second stage of the Castilla y León race, which is where Armstrong was hurt. Spaniard Alberto Contador, another Astana teammate, came second in the individual time trials. We have the World Track Cycling Championships taking place in Poland right now. Britain's Wendy Hovenagel qualified fastest in the women's individual pursuit. She will now face New Zealand's Alison Shanks in the race for gold later today.
And a couple of notable athletes coming out of retirement.
Yeah, like we're talking about Karen Kane before. It's really hard for athletes to retire.
I was just going to say, see what happens when you get retirement.
Yeah, there's an old saying that an athlete dies two deaths, is retirement and the real one, of course. So a lot of athletes really have trouble dealing with it. Anyway, former tennis number one, Kim Clijsters, looks set to announce her return to women's tennis 2 years after retiring from the sport to have a baby. She's going to hold a press conference in Belgium tomorrow, she will announce that she's going to play in the U.S. Open in September.
Hmm.
She gave birth to a little daughter, Jade Ellie, last February. She's married to an American basketball player and has recently been training and will play world team tennis, in the United States in July. 34 singles titles before retiring. She reached the top of the rankings in August of 2003 and held it in both singles and doubles, which not many people can do. In 2006, she had 427 wins, 104 defeats. One of them was to our little girl, Stephanie Dubois, in Montreal at the Masters, the Women's Masters, in 2006, 3 years ago. Clijsters had to retire because of injury, and that sort of started her down, her downward slide. And on Monday, Dubois lost in the Sony Ericsson Open in Miami to Melanie South of Britain in three sets. Took the first one 6-1, then got hammered in the next two. Canada's top women's player, Alexander Wozniak, is in the main draw. Frank Dantsevich of Canada advanced yesterday with a 6-2 into the main draw with a 6-2, 6-4 win over Dudi Sela of Israel. Sela. And another retiree, Dennis Oil Can Boyd.
Oil can.
Oil can. It's Mississippi slang for beer.
Really? Oil can.
Well, I didn't know that until
Dennis Beer Boyd?
But it's better oil can, I think.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The nickname was better than he was as a pitcher, basically. He had about 10 years in the majors. He had a couple of good years, but basically a 500 pitcher. In fact, he was 78-77, 4.04 ERA. Anyway.
Where's he coming back to?
He's coming back to Ottawa. Then I played for the Voyageurs. That's the independent Can-Am League. He last pitched in 2005 with the Brockton Sox, also in the Can-Am League. He went 4-5 that year. I always said the secret to longevity is to take care of yourself, and the smarter you get, the better it is. That's for sure, Oil Cam.
Way to go, Dennis.
The ball
Boyd.
Is coming out of my hand free and easy for the first time in years. I just want to prove I can throw 100 pitches in 30 starts and dominate. Since he's pitched in Mexico, Puerto Rico, he's really had trouble retiring, in the Northern League Sioux City Explorers, as well as the Rocks. Satchel Paige, trying to be like Satchel Paige, who pitched till he was about 60, one of the great Negro League pitchers.
That doesn't sound like a retirement at all. But what? Glad to hear he's coming back.
Who? Oil Can?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's 49. He says he's got something to prove. Why not? If you can get somebody that'll hire you.
Ah, when you love the sport. And just before you go, of course, people in Japan are thrilled over their team's World Baseball Classic Championship.
Yes, said Japanese premier after they beat the South Koreans, the Japanese, "We have confirmed the undying strength of our country through these battles."
I see.
Yes. They take their baseball seriously in Japan.
And you said they played a very elegant game.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. And the Koreans were no slouches either.
And when's the next classic?
4 years.
4 years. Okay. Thank
I'll
you very
be in
much,
retirement.
Terry. No, you won't.
No,
be.
I won't.
You'll come back for
I've
that.
I've had my retirement. 20 and 35. Huh?
Terry Haig with sports and life advice. This is the end of the link here on Radio Canada International. You know we're on the internet at www.rcinet.ca, and you'll find us also on the, what is it? The, what's the satellite? I'm all mixed up. Sirius satellite, of course, Channel 95, yes. British Columbia, CFUV radio out there. Hello to everyone in Victoria, 92.5 EX in Kamloops. On the Hotbird satellite in Europe, North Africa, the Middle East, and India. And as always, around the world on shortwave. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Within Canada, it's toll-free. No charge. Dial 1-866-202-0145 or drop us a line via email. We're at thelink@rcinet.ca, thelink@rcinet.ca. I'm Carmel Kilkenny. Glad you could join us today. Bye-bye.